Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast with tips, tricks, and coaching discussion for all cyclists, from beginner to advanced, from casual rider all the way to masters racers. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and on today's show, we're going to discuss functional threshold power and zone testing. Now, this is something that has become very ingrained in many discussions that I've had with both athletes and on forums lately. The main reason being that right now it's about a week before the holidays officially hit, before the Christmas and New Year holiday hits. And for those of you who are starting your training plans for the early season here, particularly for things like bat and kill, early season crit series, or early season road racing, particularly circuit racing, things like that, you're going to probably be starting your training plans very shortly. If not, you're in the middle of your base periods right now. A little housekeeping before we get started, though. Those of you who have been or who are listening to this podcast from my website will have noticed that there is a significant change afoot. There is a site-wide redesign that I've been working on. There are some formatting changes. There are some new pages with information on both reviews and new pages for the actual podcast that you're listening to. There are some changes being made in my training plan offerings. And there are also probably going to be some changes in my coaching offerings coming up soon. But number one would be the changes in the training plan offerings that I have. I am introducing a new system and a new structure in terms of training plans. And that new system and that new structure will be something very much along the lines of, the best way to describe it will be a modular type of training. Basically what it's going to be is the ability for you, my users and my athletes, to choose which kinds of training you want to do, and download that training in a modular fashion. So, for example, already up and available on my training site, tailwind-coaching.com, is my base module. And in this case, what you're going to be doing is you'll be able to mix and match. Take, for example, a base module. My build module should be going up in approximately within the week and should be available for download within the week. But take a base module, a build module, put that together, and you have a what would generally be approximately 20 weeks of training. Now, if you require a peak system, I'm planning to build a peak module as well, probably a 1 month or 3 week type system that can be inserted at the end of a build module plan. I'm also considering and toying with the idea of adding basically specialty modules, modules that will work on fundamental techniques and build specific fitness for things like climbing. More often than you can think, I get queries about climbing and how to improve climbing, how to go uphill faster, and how to be a stronger climber. So that what basically you would consider doing at this point and what I envision with these modules would be to either replace one of your build blocks with these modules, which would probably be approximately 3 weeks in length, maybe four including a rest week, and just simply swap it out. If you have the time, You can run a full build period and add a module to the end of that, a specialty module. I'm hoping to do like a sprinting module, a time trialing module, a climbing module, possibly a mountain biking module if there's enough interest in it. I'm primarily a road cyclist, but I got my start as a mountain biker, and I still do enjoy mountain biking, but the impetus has to be there for me to really really want to go ahead and design that plan, and really needs to be something that makes it worthwhile for me to do. So that's a little update on what's going on the training side of things. For those of you who are looking for one-on-one coaching, I absolutely would advise you to hurry up and consider that. I'm really kind of running out of space for one-on-one coaching. I have a couple people committed to the spring to a spring campaign, and if you're looking to get involved in that, send me an email, coachrobdc@gmail.com, and let's discuss that before those spots get all filled up. All right, that being said, and with our housekeeping out of the way, let's get on to the meat of today's show, which would, of course, be functional threshold power, or threshold in itself, why it is important, and what it is. Okay, functional threshold or aerobic threshold, anaerobic threshold, whatever you want to call it, lactate threshold, whatever the case may be, let's talk about this. I've got my tea, I've got my water, I'm ready to go. Okay, now, functional threshold or threshold power, whatever you want to call it. Generally, the consensus among training specialists, coaches, exercise physiologists is that functional threshold power is the maximal power output that you can stay sustain for a duration of 1 hour. Don't confuse this with average power. An average has a really a different meaning for what power is in terms of measurement as opposed to a sustained power. Now, there's plenty of ways for you to compute this, but in order to understand it and why you need it, we need to discuss a little bit and give you a little bit of background theory on basically on human physiology and what each energy system is. Now, if you look at things, and bear in mind that I have a degree in exercise science, I have a doctorate in chiropractic medicine. So I could go into excessive detail about, what all of these systems are, how they work, the different cycles, the Krebs cycles, the Krebs cycle, which is essentially for your cytoplasmic, anaerobic, non-oxidative kind of metabolism. You can go through the electron transport chain, which would be mitochondrial energy formation, generally from fat metabolism, but there's no point to do so. Basically, what you need to know is there are essentially two energy systems. You have the aerobic energy system, which is oxygen dependent, and you have the anaerobic energy system, which is non-oxygen dependent. All right, you can break up the anaerobic energy systems into the lactic acid system, the phosphocreatine system, the ATP system, all of which are various methods of extracting energy. ATP, or adenosine triphosphate, which is a molecule of energy that the body uses to perform an action. There are three different chemical pathways with which we can create energy, create ATP, release energy from ATP. Okay. The important thing to really remember is that we don't essentially need to separate those three systems out. In order to really understand why threshold is important, we only need to understand the difference between that aerobic and anaerobic system. So, anaerobic system we talked about. Aerobic system is a system of energy production that requires oxygen. It is the slowest way for the body to generate energy. But, and this is a huge but and a great sticking point for exercise physiology, the aerobic energy system can subsist and can run on several different substrates of energy. That being that would essentially mean that you can have a system that runs on fat, sugar, lactic acid, fatty acids, keto acids from the breakdown of proteins, and plenty of other molecules that are essentially byproducts of either anaerobic respiration, glycolysis, lactic acid, whatever the case may be, or fat. Those of you who've heard that aerobic exercise is good for burning fat, this is why, because the aerobic system itself is mainly fat dependent. So that's out of the way. Now we understand that there are multiple energy systems that we need to consider. Functional threshold power, or if you're talking heart rate, lactate threshold, is, in very simple terms, is the break point between where the aerobic system, I should say more the demand for energy, overwhelms the aerobic system's ability to provide that energy. So, for example, you're walking to work. You open the door, you walk up the stairs. You are doing more work than you would be at rest. However, your aerobic system is able to provide enough oxygen to your working muscles so that your body can complete the actions that you're asking it to do, i.e., walk upstairs, without having to burn glycogen, sugar, creatine phosphate, lactic acid, whatever the case may be. Contrast that to climbing a 15% hill at race pace with maybe your Sunday group ride, and now you realize you get that burn in the legs. You start to gasp for breath. Your body's demand for energy has outstripped your aerobic system's ability to provide oxygen to your working muscles. So your body has to draw energy from other sources. Those would be anaerobic sources. So, your threshold is that point at which your body essentially switches from aerobic energy production, aerobic respiration, to anaerobic respiration. So from oxygen dependent to non-oxygen dependent energy production. Okay? Excellent. What causes that need? Well, obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably understand that our muscles are what moves our joints. It's what makes our body do work. There are a couple different types of muscle fibers, too. A muscle is not just a muscle. Ignoring the fact that there's separation between skeletal muscle, cardiac muscle, and smooth muscle, which is an involuntary type of muscle. Skeletal muscle, which is a voluntary muscle, the type we use to pedal our bike, has several different fiber types. A type 1 fiber, which would be considered a slow twitch fiber, is an aerobic type fiber. It's what you use for those zone 2, zone 3 efforts, and I'll get to zones in a little bit. It's what you use for those zone 2, zone 3 efforts. Aerobic burns generally fat as a substrate, requires oxygen. Type 2A fibers are generally long-term anaerobic fibers. They are less, I should say, they're more fatigable than type 1 fibers. They tend to have a higher force production than type 1 fibers or aerobic fibers, but they also require different energy sources. While they can utilize some fat, some fat stores as fuel. They typically run off of creatine phosphate, glycogen, which is sugar, or any of those kind of things. The final type 2X fibers are a extremely fast twitch fiber, whereas a type 2A would be a fast twitch fiber, type 1 a slow twitch. They're very short-term anaerobic fibers, which would be a sprinter's muscle. These are those huge quads like you see on a guy like Andre Greipel or Tyler Farah or Mario Cipollini was not really a muscular guy. He was more of a style guy, but very quick, very fast sprinter, very high number of type 2X style fibers. Very, very short term, fatigues extremely easily, uses almost exclusively creatine phosphate and some glycogen as a substrate for producing energy. So, that being said again, there's a lot of that being said going on today, but I digress. Fiber type is generally a genetic distribution. You can't generally change it much. There is some variability with training as to the type of fiber that predominates your exercise, but it's more or less a genetic variant. And that genetic makeup should be kept in mind when you're considering your threshold, your functional threshold, your lactate threshold. Someone who has a higher percentage of those type 2 fibers, for example, a sprinter or a pursuiter or something of that nature, will have generally a higher need for anaerobic metabolism. Not that there has been a lot of research done on fiber type and functional threshold, but you could extrapolate that someone who has a very low percentage of type 1 fibers, and in this case we'd be talking almost entirely theoretical, someone with a very low percentage of type 1 aerobic fibers would probably have a lower threshold as opposed to someone with a very high percentage of type 2 fibers. I'm sorry, a very high percentage of type 1 fibers. But that would be in, you know, it basically is essentially mental masturbation. What it comes down to is how much power can you produce aerobically before the need for energy outstrips your body's ability to provide oxygen to that aerobic engine. So that's why threshold is an important thing. The long and short of it is threshold is extremely important because it determines how much work you can do before you hit that red zone. And once you hit that red zone, you have a very, very limited time before you essentially run out of energy and you bonk, you crap out, you die on the road. And I don't mean physically, you know, literally die, but you crack. You know, you've all seen those races where the lights go out on somebody and suddenly they're pedaling squares. Well, that's a case where they've been in the red way too long and they no longer have the ability to provide glycogen or lactic acid or whatever to their working muscles and get energy out of them. That's a case where functional threshold has been exceeded for a certain amount of time, and once you've exceeded threshold for a certain amount of time, there's no going back. Okay? So now we know why it's important, what it means. We're going to talk about functional threshold, how to measure it, and how to use it. Okay, now, functional threshold power, and for the purposes of this podcast, I'm going to talk in terms of FTP, functional threshold power. A quick note on heart rate training, because I know a lot of athletes out there, a lot of you who may be listening to this, are probably using heart rate monitors as your actual training tool. But here's the issue with that. A heart rate is a measure of input, okay? It's a measure of how much gas is going into your engine. It has little bearing on output, what your You know, if you're thinking of your car, your heart rate would be your input, how much gas you're putting into the engine, where how much you've pushed that accelerator down. Really, your speedometer, or better yet, if you're a car guy, you know of a dynamometer, which measures wheel horsepower, would be a measure of output, how much power is leaving the system compared to how much gas you put in. It's very much the same for a human being. During exercise, your heart rate tells you you're putting X amount of energy into your bike, into your workout. The only thing that can give you a measure of output as to how much benefit, how much work you're getting out of your body would be a power meter. And now I know someone out there is saying, but coach, you know, speed is a pretty good determinant of how much work you're doing. Yes and no. Speed is also determined by wind resistance, gradient on a hill, time of day, temperature, as is heart rate. Heart rate is incredibly variable by hydration status, how rested you are, mental state, temperature outside. Any number of things can really affect your heart rate and really change your heart rate. This is why a power meter is really the tried and true gold standard of measuring effort. It takes into account and really basically throws out the variables of temperature, mental status, you know, physical restedness, how well you slept the night before, how well hydrated you are. It's basically how much, despite the amount of work you're putting in, it's how much effort or how much physical strength and power comes out through the crankset hub, whatever the power measuring device may be. This is why a power meter is so valuable and why I will discuss things in terms of functional threshold power. To be perfectly honest with you, heart rate training has been around for years and years. There are plenty of athletes out there who train with heart rate who are monsters. There are plenty of athletes out there who train completely, quote, naked, no heart rate, no power, no cadence. Some of them don't even carry, you know, a speedometer of any kind. And they're still just beastly riders. But for true structured training, nothing is going to beat a power meter. And that's why I'm going to refer to things in terms of functional threshold power. So, we talked about what functional threshold power is, FTP. We talked about why it's important to know and why it's important. Why is it important to know? Well, it's important to know because it lets you determine and very precisely determine what power zones, what physiological energy systems you're working on during any given interval. I'm going to repeat that. How functional threshold lets you determine what energy system you are using and working during any given interval. Without knowing your functional threshold, how can you possibly structure your training appropriately in order to raise your VO2 max level power, raise your actual threshold power so that you can perform better under the same circumstances, so that you can put out more power at the same exertion level? How do you know that when your easy day comes up on your training plan, you're actually going easy? How many of you have gone out for a quote recovery ride and ended up coming back going, man, you know, I really feel tired, my legs feel kind of cooked, and I feel, you know, that was a pretty hard recovery ride. I'm raising my hand right here, you know, because I've done it also. You know, the old adage is incredibly true to the old adage is incredibly true that a recovery ride should be something where an old lady in a wheelchair can pass you and make you look like you're standing still. Without using a power meter, you going on a heart rate monitor is very difficult to know that. Without knowing your threshold, it's impossible to know that. So, as of many many, many things. The value of your training is dependent upon the accuracy of your of your functional threshold measurement. So measuring functional threshold. Measuring functional threshold is it can be done in any number of ways. Now, for those of you who are on my website, tailwind-coaching.com, you will notice that very recently something was posted up there, which is zone 4, 5, and 6 testing. Zone 4, 5, and 6 would be essentially comparable to functional threshold, VO2 max threshold, and anaerobic capacity threshold. Beyond zone 6, you are essentially looking for, or looking, I should say, looking at a level of power that's neuromuscular in nature. What that essentially means is that it's a very short, very, very short term, several seconds at most, neurologically driven contraction from your muscles using internal fuel supplies, and that's essentially it. So, calculating these, and if you really want to calculate your zone 4, 5, and 6 thresholds, I recommend you head on over to that website under training plans and you take a look at that zone 4, 5, and 6 threshold test. Best performed on a trainer, best performed under the same conditions each time for consistent results. But how do we test? Well, there's a couple ways to do this. You can calculate functional threshold using any of your programs, such as WKL Plus, Training Peaks online, or any of the others, by simply basically taking, several months' worth of data, building a mean maximal power graph out of that, and basically going out to a 1 hour point and seeing what is my average wattage for that 1 hour over the last 3 months, for example. That's one way to do it. Now, if you don't have a lot of data to deal with, you can really, I hate to say fall back on, because it's actually probably a better way to do it, would be take a race effort, specifically a 1 hour time trial, and simply your average power for that 1 hour time trial would be your functional threshold power. Not many of us do 1 hour time trials, particularly if we're doing it on a trainer indoors. Riding for 20 minutes at the same pace is difficult enough, but riding for an hour is almost impossible for many people. So, the short version of doing a functional threshold test would be to do a 20-minute time trial style, time trial-esque interval on your trainer. You'll simply look at the average power for that 20-minute effort. You'll multiply by 0.95 or 95%, and the resultant number would be your functional threshold in watts. Why do we multiply by 95% or 0.95? Because a 20-minute effort still has some residual anaerobic component to it. A 1 hour effort is almost entirely aerobic. It has to be. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to complete the 1 hour effort. At least not complete it satisfactorily. So we reduce the 20-minute effort by 5% to remove that bias of some aerobic or anaerobic performance. Okay. There's another way we can do this. You can do a ramp test. A ramp test would essentially be a starting at, for example, 100 watts of output. Increase your output by 15 watts per minute until you reach exhaustion. Okay. The final 60 seconds that you're able to sustain before exhaustion, the final complete stage essentially, you can compute your functional threshold by taking 75% of that number. It's a little less accurate than, at least in my experience, is a little less accurate than the 20-minute 95% method, but it does work. And again, the 1 hour time trial effort is probably pretty much 100% plus or minus 1 or 2% accurate. Now, so what do? We do a 20-minute time trial. How do we do this? I've talked about this in my blog on their finding your lactate threshold or functional threshold. But to make this very short, get yourself a very good warm-up, open up your legs, some hard efforts to open the legs. You're actually going to do a 30-minute time trial. You're going to take the last 20 minutes of that. So once you hit minute 10, you hit your lap button on your Garmin or on your power tap or whatever it is, and you start recording a new lap. You ride for 20 minutes, and then you do the 95%. Again, this tries to take out some of the anaerobic component of that workout and of that effort in order to give you a more true functional threshold. Okay, so now we've done our 20-minute time trial. We've taken 95% of that. Let's say that we have a threshold of 200 watts. This essentially means that we can put out 200 watts of effort at any given heart rate, at any given input, for up to an hour. How do we utilize this? Well, depending on what kind of cyclist we are, particularly if we are a more endurance cyclist. I hate to use the word more endurance because people will start confusing the term endurance cyclist with an endurance zone. I'll talk about zones here in just a moment. We need to, if you're a more endurance cyclist, our main goal is going to be raise that functional threshold power, put out more power at the same workload, the same input load, in order to increase our speed and competitiveness. To do that, we break up our power numbers into zones. So at threshold 200 watts, we would consider our zone 4. That would be our zone 4 level power. And our zone 4 level power is not exactly 100%. It's actually a range of between 91% of functional threshold, so 91% of that 200 watts, and 105% of that 200 watts. And this takes into account that we can raise or lower our threshold, our effort a little bit around that threshold and still not blow up. It's still possible to do that. However, we can't do that too many times without causing some issues, especially if we're a more untrained cyclist. But going backwards, zone 3, we run from approximately 90% of threshold all the way down to about 76% of threshold. That's our zone 3. Zone 2 would be approximately 75% of threshold down to about 55% of threshold. That's zone 2. And zone 1 would be 0% threshold, otherwise sitting on the couch eating, ding-dongs and ho-hos, all the way up to about 55% of threshold. Conversely, going the other way, when we go from 106% to 120%, we're looking at VO2 max level power, power that we can sustain with for 3 to 8, 3 to 10 minutes or so. 121 to 150% of our threshold, we're looking at anaerobic capacity, power that we're able to sustain between a minute and 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes at a time. And above 150%, we're into that more neuromuscular energy, which is at best a minute or so of production before we have to switch. We have to reduce our effort and switch to a different energy system. So why does any of this matter? Who cares what our threshold is? Well, threshold is probably the best way for us to figure out our competitive ability as a cyclist. Comparing our weight to our functional threshold or our threshold output, we are able to determine what we consider one of the benchmarks of cycling, and that would be watts per kilogram, or our power to weight ratio. So essentially, two riders both have the exact same threshold of 200 watts. One weighs 150 pounds, one weighs 200 pounds. Who's going to be faster? Well, obviously, depending on conditions, depending on terrain, but generally you would think the lighter rider is faster. They're producing more watts with essentially less body weight to push, less volume, less bulk, less weight to push around. So they're more efficient. So what we need to really focus on is increasing our functional threshold power, and we need to really focus on increasing our power to weight ratio. And the reason being for that is both are excellent determinants of our capability as cyclists. The big question is, how do we go about doing those things? All right, so how do we do this? The best way of doing this, and the best way to think about doing this, is simply ride a threshold, right? Precisely. And precisely this is why functional threshold testing and lactate threshold, or whatever you want to call it, is so important. It gives us the actual zones and the actual numbers that we need to ride within in order to increase our threshold power, increase our power to weight ratio, and increase our efficiency. If we're going to ride at 170 watts, we're not going to raise our functional threshold all that much. Now, there is the concept of sweet spotting, which I've talked about in blog posts in the past. However, we're going to ignore that for the very time being. That's a much more advanced training theory. But the bottom line is, if you want to raise the power available in any zone, whether it's zone 4, zone 5, or zone 6, you have to be working in those zones. In order to be working within those zones, you have to know what those zones are. It's a very, very simple concept, and it's something that really seems to escape people on a very deep level. really, we have to think about that. If you're not training specifically in order to find some goal, to make some goal, to raise that threshold, to work within that VO2 max level, to work with that anaerobic power, to work in your zone 3 tempo, unless you're going out and working with these specific goals in mind, are you really getting the most out of your training? This is why threshold testing and threshold power is so desperately important for those of you who are looking to improve your performance. And I'm going to wager that if you're listening to this podcast, you very well may be looking to improve your performance. So the take-home message from today, I know there was a lot of scientific discussion, there was a lot of thought process on physiology and on chemistry, on energy systems in the body, and on various training principles. The take-home discussion from today would simply be that in order to train efficiently, we need to know what energy systems we're training. In order to know what energy systems we're training, we need to know what zones we're working within. In order to know what zones we're working within, we need to know the breakpoint between oxygen-dependent aerobic metabolism and oxygen-independent anaerobic metabolism, which would be functional threshold power or lactate threshold. Now, by the way, the same thing can actually apply to heart rate training, except the zones are a little bit different. And I'm not going to go over them now, because it's you can easily look it up on my website, on the internet at large. I'm not going to go over it now because I could get into another 40 minutes on that, and I'm sure you don't want to listen to me talk about that for another 40 minutes. But Nevertheless, and I digress on this, if you're training by heart rate, keep this in mind. Your functional threshold power, heart rate in this case, your functional threshold or lactate threshold is about the most effective your heart rate monitor is going to be. VO2 max level or zone 5 heart rate, you may find it can be somewhat accurate, but anything really beyond any interval shorter than really a minute and a half, you're not going to see proper return on the numbers. The reason being, heart rate has 30 to 60 second lag between the effort you put out and when that number actually rises. If you want to look at it as a measure of work you're doing, you have to realize that it is in fact a delayed reaction. You've already expended the energy. Your body has to work a little bit harder to replace the energy that you've just expended. So that's why heart rate is a little bit suboptimal as a training tool compared to a power meter in this respect. However, again, you can still use zone 4 lactate threshold, and you can work above that. And the zones below actually are relatively useful. You can actually work very efficiently in zone 2, zone 3, zone 4. Zone 5 is a little sketchy. Zone 6 and above, forget about it. You actually don't have with a heart rate monitor, only with a power meter. So, with that note on heart rate, why it's a little less useful, take a look at my previous blog post on lactate threshold testing and functional threshold testing. If you're really serious and want to consider a little bit of power testing, take a look at my website, tailwind-coaching.com. Have a look at my zone 4, 5, 6 power testing. If you have questions, email me, coachrobdc@gmail.com. Bear in mind that I do get a fair number of inquiries, I do get a fair number of questions. So if I don't get back to you immediately, don't panic. I do respond to everybody in kind. If for some reason you don't hear from me within a week or so, go ahead and drop me another email. There is a possibility that my spam filter did catch it, and I didn't see it. But anything that I get in my inbox, rest assured that I do reply to and I do answer. For those of you who are looking, you can find me on Facebook as well. I do take Facebook messages, but please preface it as some kind of training question so that I don't think you're Facebook spam of any kind or anything like that. So, until the next time, enjoy testing your threshold. Enjoy suffering above your threshold. Thanks for listening. Ride safe, ride happy, get strong, and be well. I will talk to all of you very soon.